Before we get started today, we wanted to continue our commitment to amplifying Black voices by plugging a podcast for you to check out. This week, we'd like to promote Strong Black Lead. This podcast is partially produced by Netflix. Every Tuesday, host Tracy Clayton sits down with the legends of Hollywood that paved the way for Black representation both on and off screen. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts under Strong Black Lead or on Instagram at Strong Black Lead.
The Girl Crush Podcast. Some theme music. We're obsessed with Jennifer Aniston.
Pretty good plot.
What about her hair?
They're very messed up.
So there's actually a pretty big spread.
This is iconic Jen.
It's perfection.
I love the ending.
Jen was definitely the best.
Oh, yeah. This movie just has it all.
It's so good.
It's hilarious.
Great Jen hair and outfits.
This was super entertaining.
It's true.
Hello, and welcome to the Girl Crush Podcast. I'm Anne.
I'm Allie. Sorry.
Just overcome with emotion that it's our final episode.
Exactly.
Of season one.
Yeah.
Not ever. We love Jennifer Aniston, so we watched and ranked all of her movies. For more content related to Jen and the movies we've reviewed, find Girl Crush Podcast on Facebook or connect with us on Instagram at girlcrush_pod. And please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review.
For those who haven't listened to us before, we rate every movie on 5 categories. Plot, Jen's character, and Jen's acting all out of 10 points. Jen's hair out of 2 points, and a Would You Watch Again score out of 5 points. If you want to hear more about our rating system and how we came up with it, we encourage you to check out episode 1. Today is our season 1 finale! Yay!
Crazy.
We're a little bit emotional about it.
We are.
But we just announced our season 2 girl crush on our last episode, so if you haven't heard who that is yet, we're super excited. Our season 2 girl crush is Sandra Bullock.
I wasn't even going to try to say it with you.
Yeah. But for today's episode, we'll be reviewing our final Jennifer Aniston film, which is Life of Crime. This movie was released in 2013. Jen plays a character named Mickey Dawson. And in this film, two common criminals get more than they bargained for when they kidnap the trophy wife of a wealthy man, asking for a hefty ransom, only to find out that he doesn't actually want her back. So we originally watched this for free with Amazon Prime the first time we watched, but it looks like that's no longer available, so now you'll need to either rent it on Amazon Prime or Redbox. And if you haven't seen the movie, now is a good time to pause and go watch it, which we really, really recommend you do. Anne's going to take us through the plot, which will have spoilers, but this is a really good movie. It came up out of nowhere. We hadn't heard of it before, so we're super excited to go through it, but definitely think this one is worth the watch without hearing our spoilers first. So go watch it and then come back and listen to the rest of the episode.
Yes. All right, so for the plot of Life of Crime, we gave it a 9 out of 10. Like Allie said, this movie is awesome. And it is set in Detroit in 1978, and we meet two men named Lewis and Wardell, and they're making plans to commit a heist, kind of, on a rich man who's making a ton of unclaimed money in Detroit. So he's, like, banking away probably 50 grand a month and not claiming it on his taxes. And they're talking about how they know he'll pay up if he wants to see his wife again. So you flash over to this very ritzy party, and you see a drop-dead gorgeous Jen with this swept Beautiful. Back hair and this gorgeous dress. And her name is Mickey, and she's married to Frank Dawson, who's a very rich real estate developer. And he kind of directly calls her his trophy wife.
Ugh.
I know, he's gross. And when the party ends, Mickey says she wants to drive, and she's like, trying to be nice about it. Frank is super drunk, and he refuses to let her drive, and he's berating her in the car on the way home, speeding, driving recklessly. And when he parks in the driveway, he hits her car and then blames her for parking in the middle of the driveway.
So stupid.
Yeah.
He's clearly a huge jerk. And she's like, in this interaction, you learn very quickly she's a little bit afraid of him. She feels very belittled by him. And it's very clear, like, he doesn't have a lot of respect for her.
Yeah, you never get the feeling that he is physically abusive, but still when he reaches towards her, she kind of flinches away from him.
Yeah, like she's unsure if he could cross that line.
Exactly. So we go back to Lewis and Wardell, and they are seen in the living room of a neo-Nazi named Richard, who has a bunch of antique guns and, like, a lot of Nazi paraphernalia in his house. And so Wardell is black. And it's kind of odd because he seems way more comfortable in Richard's house than Lewis, right. Even though Richard is a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to have a plan that Richard is somehow involved in this. And they tell him that he's going to, quote, follow her. but they tell him it's not today. Mm-hmm. It's just like a shocking interaction from the beginning, and you're like, what are these guys up to?
Yeah. Also, I want to know how they all met.
That's a great question.
Right?
Yeah. And Louis and Ardell kind of have this funny conversation about Richard because Louis is so perturbed by him. Mm-hmm. He's like, this guy is crazy.
Right. Like, why are we doing this with him?
Yeah. And Ardell just kind of writes it off. And he's like, mm-hmm. yeah, but, you know, he's good for this job. I'm like, mm-hmm. never befriend a Nazi. Okay.
Wise words from Girl Crush Podcast.
Just really wrapping up this season with advice you can take with you while you wait for season two.
So if we had to tell you that, just stop listening.
True.
Yeah. So Louis and Ardell see a photo in the paper of Mickey, and they say, that's her. That's Mickey. So you can kind of assume Mickey is the wife they're going to ransom for money. So Frank, Mickey's husband, tells her that he's going to Freeport at the end of the week for a meeting with some investors, but he's suggesting flying to South Beach early and taking their son, Bo, to go visit her parents.
And Bo is Wyatt from Ozark, which blew my mind. The first time we watched it, I didn't even recognize it. And the second time, Kale was watching it with us and recognized him.
You really don't recognize it. And I'm like, okay, the first season of Ozark came out just a couple years after
this.
And he looks
he looks so
baby
young
in this movie.
Yes. It's crazy.
I didn't recognize him at first either.
Yeah.
It is crazy. So Ardell calls someone who tells him that Frank is leaving town with his son tomorrow. So they have like a lot of connections. Mm-hmm. So Mickey drops her son off at the country club to play tennis. Like I said, they're pretty wealthy. And she sees Marshall, who is a family friend. And he tells her that at the dinner the night before, he had asked her to lunch and that he was serious. And Mickey seems a little uncomfortable. She doesn't want to get into something. But Marshall's pretty sincere about lunch, says he had asked Frank to play tennis. And Frank said he was going to be gone all week. So he's like kind of trying to say, Frank's not going to find out about this.
Right.
He said he's going to be gone, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. But Frank had told Mickey that he'd only be gone for a couple days. He did not tell her he'd be gone for the whole week, so she's kind of annoyed by that.
Mm-hmm. So Marshall's played by Will Forte, who played Jen's boyfriend, Josh, and she's funny that way. And he's also from SNL.
Yeah, very familiar face.
Mm-hmm.
So Louis walks into the country club, kind of sneaks in, and he watches mm-hmm. Mickey watching her son play tennis from this like kind of balcony area, just creeping on her, kind of scoping her out. Maybe he's tailing her instead of Richard. I'm not sure, whatever. But he even returns Bo's racket to Mickey after Bo kind of throws it in frustration. So now he's like made contact with her. She's mm-hmm. seen him. I find this really unnerving because not that we're like, you know, socialites who are going to get kidnapped, but isn't that scary that like,
yes, like someone could just be like following you.
Yeah. And then they could be pretending to do a nice thing for you. And it's really not.
Oh, no. I'm going to think that anytime someone does something nice for me now, a stranger.
Someone opens the door for you. You're like, no.
I'm like, who are you? Who are you and what do you want?
Can I see some ID, please? So second moral of the story is don't trust anyone. So we flash to Louis and Ardell, who are making plans. They're finding their masks, et cetera, et cetera. And they know someone that they can use to get to Frank's money because he's storing it offshore in the Bahamas. And Ardell has a connection in the Bahamas whose girlfriend manages the bank where Frank keeps his money. So like they've done their research on this. Mm-hmm. And their plan is to take the ransom money and transfer it to another account in Nassau, essentially assuring that they're not going to get caught.
Right.
It's pretty well thought out.
Yeah, it's pretty in-depth.
Yeah. So the next day, Mickey is on the phone. And at this point, Frank is gone and he's taken their son with him. So she's home alone. Mm-hmm. And she's on the phone when Louis and Ardell pull up, kind of posing as handymen. And they have these super creepy masks on. One is a rat and one is Richard Nixon, which is hilarious. This is so random. Do you remember when those, like, George W. Bush masks
were so popular? Brought this up.
That's ridiculous.
We were at an event once, and two people were dressed up. Was it as Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump?
Yeah.
In those exact kind of masks. And it was the funniest thing in the world. They were, like, dancing together. It was so funny.
I'm imagining it. I was actually going to ask what color pantsuit Hillary Clinton was wearing.
Green.
Kayla remembers.
Amazing.
That's amazing. Anyway, Louis and Ardell in their masks pick the locks and they sneak in through both the front and back doors. And just as Mickey hangs up the phone, they approach her with guns. obviously she screams, freaks out. She drops this jar of marmalade that she was holding and she ends up stepping on it and cutting her feet. And they put a mask over her face with the eyes taped over. They kind of seem concerned for a split second that she just cut her feet on the glass, but then they're like, it doesn't matter, whatever. But just then, someone pulls up to the house. So they're like, who are you expecting? And of course she says, my husband's coming home, but they know that's not true.
Right.
So they rush her upstairs to hide her. She's like bleeding on the carpet. And it's Marshall. He's come to pick Mickey up for lunch. And I don't even know, like, did she ever actually agree to the lunch or is he just pursuing it?
It seemed uncertain. I think he's just pursuing it. Like, she was trying to turn him down.
Yeah. So he, like, lets himself into the house. He puts on this nice little record. He's making martinis. Spills everywhere. Not a skilled bartender.
Right.
And then he starts to go upstairs with the drinks and walks into the bedroom where they're holding her hostage, essentially, with, like, a gun to her head. And his reaction to her being held hostage is a really calm, what the heck? And then they knock him out, but he ends up, like, hitting his head on a dresser and bleeding. And they're like, oh, man. Because now they're, like, hurting people they didn't mean to. But they lock him in the closet, and they kind of decide to continue on the plan to take Mickey. And now that I'm thinking about this, I'm like, okay, if he let himself in and he made those drinks and just brought him upstairs, like, was this something that had happened before, do you think? He seemed way too comfortable doing that.
Yes. And the weird thing is, you get the sense that they're, like, really good family friends. So I was uncertain if it was just he's been in their house a bunch of times before as a family friend, or if maybe this had happened before and she was trying, like, to stop it, or she was just, for her own conscience, trying to make it seem like she was going to say no. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd have to watch it again, but I got the sense from their first conversation that it had happened before. She definitely was not trying to get into it this time. My thought was, oh, this has definitely happened before. And she's just not interested right now or whatever.
That's Kale jumping in. That's our producer, also my husband, who watched the movie with us. So
dual roles.
Yeah.
So Lewis and Ordell drive Mickey to Richard's house. Remember the neo-Nazi? Now she's blindfolded in this Nazi's house. And they lock her in a bedroom upstairs. And Lewis tells her that when she hears the door close, she can take the mask off. Meanwhile, in the Bahamas, Frank is seen lounging with this woman named Melanie, played by Isla Fisher, which I love.
Yes.
Who's, like, she's very clearly his mistress. They seem to have a much more playful relationship, and he seems to be way less mean to her than he is to Mickey.
Yeah, not fair.
Yeah, but he's also trash-talking Mickey to her all the time. So, back at Mickey's house, Marshall wakes up in the closet and breaks the closet door down so he can get out. Remember, he has his, like, head wound now, so he beats his car with a shovel to have an excuse for why his face is messed up. And he goes home, he's obsessively watching the news, he's, like, super short with his wife and his teenage daughter, pretty much watching to see, like, what happened to Mickey. Obviously, she wasn't in the room when he woke up in the closet.
Right.
But he, like, doesn't call the police.
It's so weird.
It is. So, Ordell went ahead and called his contact in the Bahamas, and he finds out that Frank's been seeing the same woman every time he goes down there, obviously Melanie. And Lewis and Ordell seem, like, a little surprised by this news, but they ultimately decide it doesn't matter. Frank tells Melanie, his mistress, that he filed for divorce, and he continues talking really bad about Mickey to her. And he said that the papers will be delivered Tuesday, and he pretty much came down to the Bahamas early so that he wasn't at home when they were delivered, which I think is, like, the ultimate coward move.
Yeah, seriously.
Back at Mickey's hostage situation, Richard is a super creep, and he drilled a hole in the wall so he could spy on Mickey, both in the bedroom and the bathroom, which is so creepy.
This is so creepy. And it's kind of interesting because, like, before this, you get the sense that, like, obviously Lewis and Ordell are doing something really bad, but once she's there with them, they don't treat her poorly. They, like, give her meals. They definitely aren't, like, overly nice to her, but they're not menacing and being creeps to her. So
she's not, like, locked in a concrete basement. She's, like, in a nice bedroom.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They're in this to do this crime, but they're not trying to, like, terrify her or kill her. And Richard, on the other hand, is a total creep.
Yeah. I mean, he's a scary looking dude anyway, without the other flaws added to his character. So, yeah. So Lewis sees Richard spying on her and he's like, what are you doing, man? And Mickey in the room hears Lewis address him, and she sees the hole that's in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And Ordell and Lewis decide, like, they need to get Richard away from Mickey. I mean, she's a beautiful woman,
mm-hmm.
and he's super creepy, obviously. And so they're like, let's get Richard out of the house to do some reconnaissance work. And so they tell him to go to the Dawson's house to see if Marshall is still knocked out in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
So Lewis and Ordell put their masks on, and they sit in the room with Mickey. And they ask her why she's not on the news yet. Why has nobody noticed that you're missing yet? Asking if she's having an affair with Marshall. Why he didn't call the police. And they ask her if he's the type of guy that would stick his neck out for her. And she's like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's remarkably calm during this.
Yes, she is. She composes herself very well.
She's like, I can't tell you why nobody has noticed. Like, right. I don't know. It's been a day. I don't know. So they decide they're going to go ahead and call Frank and tell him that they're holding Mickey ransom. And they put Mickey on the phone just long enough so that he can hear her voice. And they demand for him to take $1 million from his account and deposit it into another account. Frank is unconvinced, and even after telling him he'll never see Mickey alive again, he's really hesitant to even believe them. But what seems to finally get him on board is when they say they know about his unclaimed money that he has in this account in the mm-hmm. Bahamas. So then he's like, okay, I'll write down the number. Meanwhile, upstairs, Mickey is smoking a cigarette in her room that Lewis had given her, while Richard is spying on her. And she sees the hole again. She, like, knows he's there. And she sneaks up next to it. And she shoves the cigarette into the hole in his eye. Which is so painful to watch and so satisfying because I hate him.
This is, like, my favorite part. It's amazing. She, like, I just love the way she creeps up against the wall so we can't see her. And jams it right in there.
And this seems like, you know, this seems like when she starts to kind of, like, take control of her situation. Which I really mm-hmm. like. So Richard obviously is pissed, and he tries to break into the room to get to her. And Lewis and Ordell hear this commotion. They go upstairs, and Lewis is like, well, that's what you get for making a peephole. And Lewis kind of yells to ask if she's okay, and he seems kind of impressed by her, you know, mm-hmm. guts to do something like that.
Yep.
So he brings Mickey dinner, including a PBR. Like Allie said, they're taking care of her. And she has her mask on, but she leaves one eye uncovered because she had covered the peephole with the piece of tape. And Lewis is like, no, why? He doesn't seem, like, mad. He's just like, come on, man.
Yeah.
And he tells her to take the mask off and just not look. And I don't know. His reaction is just so mild instead of
like, well, now we have to kill you.
Yeah. He's just like, dang it.
Yeah.
The duct tape didn't hold up. So Lewis tells Mickey that her husband is having an affair, which she did not know about and she didn't suspect. And I'm like, how did you not suspect that?
He's I know, really. Jerk. Like, yeah.
Lewis also asks her if she knows about Frank's personal account in the Bahamas with over $1 million in it, which she also didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of, you know, contemplating on that. And down in the Bahamas, Frank is, meanwhile, explaining his money laundering or extortion to Melanie with his real estate business in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And Melanie just, like, kind of casually suggests calling Lewis and Ordell's bluff and just, like, seeing what happens. Mm-hmm. She's like, maybe they're lying.
Yeah, like, she's unconcerned for Mickey's life.
Yeah. So Marshall keeps calling the Dawson's house repeatedly, but obviously nobody is answering. You know, he's really worried about Mickey. Mm-hmm. He finally goes into a phone booth at the country club to call 911 to report Mickey's disappearance anonymously. But while he's in the middle of it, his wife and daughter see him, so he hangs up before he can give the police literally any information. They're like pounding on the... I'm like, the man's in the middle of a call. Can you give him a second?
Yeah, seriously.
Come on. So that is his one attempt at reporting her kidnapping.
Right.
So Mickey no longer wears a mask around Lewis at this point, and they kind of talk to each other through the walls as well. He says she's the first person he's kidnapped. And Mickey admits that she's seen him before at the country club. She's like, I recognize you from mm-hmm. the country club. So, like, she's kind of piecing things together.
I also have to say here, so at this point, she's been there for, like, a day or two, right?
I think so. Yeah, a couple days.
A couple days. I don't know, 2 days at least. And her hair still looks perfect. It's like, I just don't know in that situation how she still looks so put together. My hair would either be like crazy everywhere or just thrown up in a ponytail. Granted, maybe she didn't have a ponytail holder, I guess.
Maybe hairspray was stronger in the 70s?
Maybe. That seems possible.
So Mickey is not convinced that Frank is going to pay this $1 million. Mm-hmm. She's like... She kind of laughs at Lewis for assuming right. that he's actually going to. And instead, she asks Lewis to tell her more about the apartments, which is where Frank is moving this $50,000 a month from into his Bahamas account. So she's kind of like curious about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep calling Frank, but Melanie keeps answering and telling them Frank's not there. And at one point, Ordell calls Melanie by her name.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a little weirded out that they knew her name. And she just suggests that they unplug the phone and essentially ignore the entire situation.
Right.
And I love that Melanie, this whole movie, is just kind of like guessing at what they should do. And Frank just goes along with it, kind of dumbfounded the entire time.
Yeah, they're just like, all right, yeah, we'll try this.
She's like, what if we just unplug the phone and ignore them? See what happens. And he's like, okay. He's like, sure. Should I talk to them? She's like, no, you should not talk to them. He's like, okay. So Marshall sneaks back to the Dawson's house. He looks like a 70s Sherlock Holmes. And he's kind of clearing evidence from the house, wiping his fingerprints from stuff, cleaning up the broken glass, etc. And as he's walking out, Richard, dressed as a police officer, approaches him, asking him what he's doing. And after an awkward exchange, Marshall gets in his car trying to leave, but Richard pulls this ancient gun out and asks him to get out of the car. And thankfully, a dog with their, you know, dogs know bad people senses, runs through the bushes mm-hmm. and bites Richard's leg, allowing Marshall to get away. And Richard shoots after him, but doesn't hit him.
I mean, this is in broad daylight in the middle of, like, a very nice, like, suburban neighborhood.
Yeah, and he looks insane. He has an eye patch on at this point, if you remember the cigarette incident yes. with the eye. Like, he looks he's crazy.
He's terrifying.
Also, this was an excellent opportunity for Marshall to call 911 again. He could have called from their house. Did they even have caller ID then? No. He could have just called.
Yeah, seriously.
But he didn't. Yeah, Richard is horrifying. So, Lewis and Ordell are trying to decide what to do next, since Frank and Melanie think they are not, like, they're not taking them seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And Ordell wants to send them a message and suggests sending them Mickey's ring finger. But Lewis is like, we are not cutting off her finger.
Right.
That is not what we need to do. Instead, they decide Ordell will go to the Bahamas to pretty much force him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And Lewis will stay in Detroit because they don't trust Richard with Mickey. So Ordell shows up in the Bahamas at the pool where Melanie is tanning, and he ends up throwing her into the water off the dock and won't help her out until she agrees to help him, and they throw her a life ring. And side note, she cannot swim, so she's freaking out.
Yep.
So Melanie takes them back up to Frank's place. She pours drinks for them. She's super calm. She's like, tell me more about what's happening here.
Right, like, how does she remain so calm? No idea.
She's like, you want a screwdriver? And she tells Ordell that Frank filed for divorce and that if they kill her, they've just saved him hundreds of thousands of dollars in alimony and that getting $1 million out of him is impossible. She then says she'll cooperate with Ordell and offers him $100,000 to just disappear. So she's like playing this game now with right. them.
Yeah, she's basically like trying to see what she can get out of this deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, her actions in this scene are so great because she's, again, just calling the shots so nonchalantly. And she's essentially just guessing and right. kind of like, well, what if I gave you this? Like, would you go away?
Yeah. But she kind of ends up coming up with a plan that they're, like, intrigued by. Ordell's like, all right.
Yeah. So she also says that if Mickey's dead, then she could get him more than just the $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the plot thickens. So Ordell is now in on this with Melanie, this, like, other plan. And he calls Richard and tells him that they need to take Mickey home, put her in the closet, lock her up. And then he tells Richard that Richard needs to go back to the house and kill Mickey without Lewis knowing. Because obviously Lewis wouldn't go for this. But Ordell convinces Richard it's the right thing to do because she's seen their faces now. She knows who they are. You know, people can end up in jail, etc. And so Richard's like, yeah. So Richard tells Lewis, like, the first half of the plan, but Lewis seems really suspicious because he didn't talk to Ordell himself, and Richard is a psychopath. But Lewis is like, okay. So he tells Mickey that she's going home, and she's like, my husband paid you? Like, totally not believing it. And Lewis right. just says, I guess. She, like, freaks out. She's like, are you going to kill me? You don't need to kill me. Like, I promise I won't say anything. Like, she right. clearly does not trust the situation because... Yeah. She was so convinced Frank would not pay the money.
Right.
And Lewis tells her to trust him and leaves to go get a car to, like, transport her in. So Richard goes into Mickey's room while Lewis is gone. She's obviously very freaked out because he's horrifying. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, why didn't you eat your ham for dinner? And then says, oh, I forgot, you can't because of your religion. Because Ordell told him that she was Jewish, since he's a friggin' Nazi, to make him more motivated to kill her. So this is just, like, not cool at all. Not cool. So Richard proceeds to attack Mickey, forces himself on top of her, like, forces her to start taking her clothes off. And Lewis arrives home, like, just in the nick of time. And Mickey kicks Richard in the balls, and then Lewis punches Richard and takes Mickey out of the house to the car. So they, like, leave without Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Horrifying scene.
Yeah.
Richard looks insane chasing after them with his loaded World War II gun and a robe and slippers in the middle of the snow shooting after the car. Like, he looks crazy.
I don't even know what I would do if I saw that man.
And just as he runs into the street, a cop hits him, LOL. And he kind of, like, wanders back into his house while the cop comes to and calls for backup. He says, got a wild-looking asshole firing a handgun.
I love that.
So, you know, a lot of cops show up, and they're surrounding Richard's house, where he's blasting German war music and starts shooting World War II rifles from the window. It's truly crazy.
It is.
And one of the cops goes in through the back door and ends up shooting Richard and killing him. So, good riddance, Richard.
Yes. Applause.
So, in the Bahamas, Melanie and Ordell have now hooked up and have now also teamed up on how to get money out of Frank. And she tells Ordell that he could have done a way better job setting up this entire thing. She's like, you made a lot of mistakes. You could have done a lot better. So, Lewis drives Mickey, and she asks where he's taking her, and he says home. And she kind of thinks about it, and then she says she doesn't want to go home. And Lewis is kind of pleasantly surprised, but doesn't say anything. So Mickey and Lewis go back to Lewis's apartment. She smokes weed. She eats pizza. She knows Lewis's name because Richard told her. And she's putting together all the pieces. She's still skeptical of the fact that Lewis doesn't know whether his partner was actually paid $1 million or not. But she ultimately says that she's ready to go home.
I think this part is so interesting because there's definitely a turn here. Like, up until this point, like, when she's been at Richard's house, she's clearly been taken captive. But at this point, when Lewis is, like, driving her and they end up at his apartment, they sort of seem like kind of friends. Like, mm-hmm. you can tell she kind of lets her guard down a little bit. And, like, she's at least trusting that he won't hurt her. And they even, like, touch hands at one point. And she's not, like, afraid. She doesn't, like, back away from it or anything like that. So it's kind of interesting. Like, they have seemed to form a little bit of a connection. I think, like, the basis of that connection is not super clear yet. But it's, like, a door has kind of been opened, at least for them to not be, like, hostile.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, like, they've had good conversations throughout. Obviously, mm-hmm. Lewis has protected her from a lot of things.
Right.
You know, yeah, it's weird.
It kind of makes you, like, scratch your chin. You're like, wait a second.
And you can't tell if it's, like, Stockholm Syndrome or if it's her just really taking charge of her life.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, totally. And I feel like understanding his character a little bit because, as the audience, I feel like we learn pretty quickly where his moral lines are, like the lines that he won't cross. Like, he's fine being a criminal, stealing money, and even kidnapping someone. But, like, when it comes to harming people, like, he does not want to do that.
Yeah. And I don't think that she was only there for a couple of days. I don't think she was there long enough for it to be Stockholm Syndrome. Like, doesn't that usually take...
I think so, too.
Weeks or months or even years.
Yes.
You know, like, I think it's just her realizing her options.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Or that she's stronger than she thinks.
Right.
Anyway, he does take her home, and she sees the broken closet door. She receives the divorce papers. They were delivered while she was being held captive. And she goes to this country club lunch, and all the ladies are talking about, like, the pressures of life, you know, like, dance class and private school for their kids. And she casually just says, I was kidnapped. And they all just look at her, and she gets up and walks out, which I think is amazing.
It's amazing. Like, they clearly think she's kidding. Like, nobody takes her seriously. She's, like, suddenly realized what this life is, or maybe just how, like, how superficial this life at the country club is.
Yeah, and all her friends just, like, I think it gave her a lot of perspective on, yes. you know, what's actually bad and what's not.
Right.
So as Mickey's leaving the country club, she sees Marshall outside, and she's pissed because he never called the police for her.
Seriously.
He didn't even, and when he sees her, he doesn't even ask what happened. He's just surprised to see her.
It's crazy.
She's like, are you kidding me? So when Mickey gets home, Frank is just arriving home, and he pretty much avoids the entire subject until Mickey brings it up, and she's like, did you pay them? And he said they backed off when he wouldn't pay them. And again, she's super angry. She's like, what if they weren't bluffing, Frank?
Right.
Like, this is a big thing to call someone's bluff on. And Frank has the audacity to tell her that she's acting crazy.
Nope.
It's a bad idea to ever tell a woman that she's acting crazy.
Yes.
But especially when your wife is angry that you didn't pay ransom while they were threatening to kill you.
Yes!
That's not the time to say she's acting crazy, okay? I'd be like, you really want to see crazy? You want to see crazy right now? I'll show you crazy. Anyway, she brings up the divorce papers and she sits down and she's so calm about it. I mean, like, you get the feeling she was thinking about leaving him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, so what's my part of the settlement? Do I get some of this Freeport account? And he's like, well, that doesn't exist. And she's like, well, I want to see these apartment buildings and all these appliances and materials. And he seems surprised that she knows about it and that she's addressing him like this because she's being very direct.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I could send you to prison if I wanted. And Frank's like, What happened to you in there? Did they take advantage of you? Like, something's different.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's just like, screw this.
Yeah. Her character is completely different now.
So different. Yeah.
She's like so strong towards him.
So next we see Mickey waiting at her car and Lewis is meeting up with her. She kind of like invited herself to his place. And they joke around a little bit, making kind of light of the situation.
Yeah.
And he tells her that Ordell is back, but he's not alone because he brought Melanie with him. So Lewis brings Mickey inside, and when Melanie realizes who she is, she's like, what? And Melanie, like, at first doesn't even believe that it's her because she asks what's going on. She thinks that Lewis and Ordell are playing a joke on her, but Mickey points out a birthmark on Frank, so Melanie knows it's really Mickey, and she's right. Like, what is happening here? So Mickey reveals to Ordell that Frank is divorcing her to be with Melanie. So now Ordell is worried because Melanie's loyalties actually lie with Frank and not with him.
Mm-hmm.
And Melanie kind of is uncomfortable and she excuses herself to go to the bathroom. And Mickey says, there goes the future Mrs. Dawson. She looks like a million bucks. And she assures Ordell and Lewis that Frank actually does want to marry Melanie. Like, he wants to be with her. She has the divorce papers, etc. Mm-hmm. So when Melanie walks out of the bathroom, she says she thinks they should call Frank. And Mickey, Lewis, and Ordell are sitting there wearing masks and holding duct tape. And they say, yeah, let's call him.
Yes!
And that's the end of the movie.
It's such a good ending. It's so unexpected. Like, the first time we watched this, when Mickey goes back to Lewis's apartment, and it, like, invites herself there, you're like, what? This is weird. And then you're like trying to figure out why she went back there. I guess they formed some sort of connection. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And then that last moment, oh, I love it.
And I don't even know, like, was that planned? Like, did she go back with that? She couldn't have gone back with that intent. She didn't know Melanie was there. Like, they just hatched that plan while she was in the bathroom.
I know. It's crazy.
I love it.
I love it. It's so good.
Oh my gosh. This movie is just amazing. I mean, we were really nervous. Yes. I don't even know if I should say this.
Sure.
So we were really nervous to rewatch this because if you haven't figured it out, this is our top movie for the season. Yes. And as we're going back through everything and we're rewatching everything else, we're like, did we rate this correctly? Like, are we sure that this is the top movie? It is the top movie.
Right.
It is.
It is so good. It came up out of nowhere, too. Like, I had never even heard of this movie, which is really weird because it came out in 2013. So, you know, I was watching movies that old enough to, like, know of things going on. So it's weird that I had never even heard of it.
You were old enough to watch movies after you graduated college? It's crazy.
I know. Shocking. I don't know how to... Because it was 2013. So it's like, I would remember if a movie came out in 2013.
Better? And this was released in theaters. I don't know if this was just released in some, like, art house theaters, maybe. Like,
it wasn't a full push.
Because I can't imagine that I wouldn't have seen this in theaters if I'd been like, oh, new Jennifer Aniston movie in theaters? Yeah, I'm going.
Yeah, that's a good point. Huh. So it was first released in some film festivals, the Toronto International Film Festival, as well as the Traverse City Film Festival and Abu Dhabi Film Festival in 2013. But then it was released in theaters in 2014. But on Wikipedia, okay. There's, like, no box office references for it, which I feel like usually on Wikipedia they have that. So I don't know if maybe – oh, wait, here, box office, $1.5 million.
Yeah.
I mean, did we decide that was a lot? Or?
No, it's not a lot.
So, yeah, maybe it wasn't, like, a national release.
Yeah, it must not have been.
So something to note, Jen was also an executive producer of this film, which I think is really cool. I love that it just so happened to be that the movie we picked as the top movie is one that she produced, because I just think it's so cool to see her having like blossomed in her career to be doing more things like producing. So I think it's really cool that she was a part of that as well.
Yeah. And she said like she does her big box office movies so that she can do projects like this.
Right.
Even when you're starting the movie, like the 1970s set, the costumes, even the way it's filmed.
Yes.
Is so good. Like it really transports you back. I think there's some elements of like really crafty cinematography in this as well.
Yes.
That really elevate it, in my mind at least, where mm-hmm. I was like, this is not just a cut and dry drama or whatever you want to call it.
Yes, it's artistic.
Yes, it is.
I love the whole 1970s theme too. Like, it very much transports you there. And this was based off of a book, so I don't know if the time was important to the book, like the timeline it took place in, but I love that they kept it in the 70s, if that's what the book was too, because I just think it adds to the whole storyline mm-hmm. and the characters and the way that they're interacting with each other. I don't know. It just feels all very 70s. They do a really good job of portraying that.
And I think we've said with some other movies where we're like, we think this movie would have landed better if it was set a little further back.
Right.
And I think this one just really hits the nail on the head. Also, did you know the book was called The Switch?
I saw that, yes.
Isn't that funny?
That is really funny.
That's amazing.
But she'd already been in the movie The Switch, so they probably couldn't name it that.
Yeah, very fitting. I also think that the plot is just set up really well. Like, they set up the entire kidnapping and plan very well. Mm-hmm. It's jumping between characters. Maybe me reading it back was a little confusing, but watching it, it's not confusing at all.
Right.
And I think you get good enough context on the motive and how they're going to pull it off successfully. Like, I mm-hmm. wish there was maybe a little more background. Like you said, like, how the yeah. heck did they end up with Richard?
Right.
But I think there's enough there that it's not a huge plot hole. It's not distracting. Yeah, it's not.
I actually didn't even think of that until we were recording. So it's definitely not distracting.
Yeah.
I think the acting in the whole movie is so good. Like, obviously, we'll get into Jen's acting, but aside from her, I think Lewis and Ordell are both really good actors. I think Lewis especially really stands out to me. I think he does a really good job of playing the line between a villain, but a villain that you end up sort of liking because mm-hmm. he ends up kind of protecting Mickey and things like that. So you find yourself sort of drawn to him and like rooting for him, even though he's technically a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think his acting is really, really good. I actually think everybody's acting was really strong. I think it was cast really well.
I agree. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of Isla Fisher. I love mm-hmm. that she's in this movie. I think her character is both hysterical and yes. cunning and like smart without knowing that she's smart.
Right.
And she just like plays just the kind role.
Of throwing
she plays the role
wall.
So well. Yeah. yeah. She's like,
but then she's like, actually, yeah, this is a good idea.
Yeah. She's like, I just came up with a really good plan.
Right.
And like you said about Lewis, like, I love that Lewis, maybe not Ordell, but that they're not inherently bad. Like, I don't think they're setting out to hurt anybody. They're worried right. even at the beginning when she cuts her foot. They didn't mean to hurt Marshall. They mm-hmm. make sure Mickey, from the very beginning, has her own room. She's comfortable. They're protecting her from Richard. And I just, like we said in our last episode for Bertha Miller's, like, this is probably a role that you could easily stereotype. And right. I like that they break the stereotype and they don't fit that.
Yeah, totally agree.
And obviously the plot twist at the end is phenomenal.
It's so good.
Like, your jaw drops.
Yeah, you're not expecting it at all.
No.
It's genius. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Do you think that this plot twist is better than the plot twist in Derailed?
Oh, that's really tough. I like this one better. I think it is. Yes, I think it's better. I think Derailed, you see it coming a little bit before it happens. You're like, wait a second.
mm-hmm.
And so you have a few moments before you get the confirmation. But this one, I think, is like, you don't know what's going to happen until they have their masks on, which is like the last shot of this film.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think I agree with that. I mean,
yeah.
Derailed has more than one plot twist, which is fun.
That's true.
But in general, I think this plot twist is set up better.
I agree. And this plot is more, it's more well thought out. Like, Derailed had some plot holes and stuff, even though it was a fun plot. You're kind of like, well, that doesn't really make sense. Whereas yeah. this one, I think it's a really solid plot. And I think, like, too many twists throughout could have made it, like, too unbelievable.
And this plot also is, I mean, we gave it a 9 out of 10. I think we probably could have given it an even higher score. But
mm-hmm.
it is so different from any other Jennifer Aniston movie. Like,
yes.
it's different from almost every other movie. I've never seen a movie like this, and maybe I'm just naive, and, you know, there are, I'm sure, other movies like this, but...
No, I think all the things we've talked about, too, help to make it different from, like, the typical movie. Mm-hmm. I was even thinking about, like, what genre we would call this movie, because it doesn't quite fit into any, like, normal genre that we generally think of. Like, I don't think it's just, like, a crime movie. Mm-mm. But I don't know. I was thinking it's like kind of like a crime dramedy, which is sort of funny. Like, it has different, it has like comedy, it has drama, it has crime. So it's kind of unique for it to be all those things in one and to do each of them really well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's kind of a mashup of the best of both worlds.
Yeah, like there's just enough funny moments in it to cut the tension and give you a little bit of that comedic relief,
mm-hmm.
like every so often in the movie.
Yeah, agreed.
So what did you dislike about it, if anything?
The only thing I really dislike is that Marshall never calls 911. Like, he tries that one time, but he's alone in his office at one point. He's back at their house at one point. Like, he could have called 911 or made more of an effort to report her kidnapping. Even anonymously, like, put a letter in the mail to the police. I don't care. Like, just especially given the fact he supposedly loves her. And then he's just like, well, I'm just going to go wipe my fingerprints off and make sure no one knows I was there. I'm like, right. What?
Yeah, like, what are you thinking? I feel like he could have easily come up with an excuse for why he was there. Like, he could have still put away the martini glasses, like, put away the record, so that part of it wasn't obvious. But, like, her husband was out of town, and he's a family friend. Like, he couldn't come up with an excuse of why she might have needed his help, or, like, something with her car broke down, so she asked if he could come look at it. Like, I just feel like he could have come up with a lie that would have allowed him to call the police without being so fearful that he was going to get caught in this affair or supposed affair or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So, didn't totally understand that part of it. If there were a plot hole in this movie, it's that.
Yeah, that's the only one, I think. I also looked up and saw that Dennis Quaid was originally cast as Frank Dawson.
Honestly, I would have loved that.
I don't know. I can't really see him pulling off the role like this guy does. I don't know. I think it was well cast the way it ended up.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it was cast very well. I just love Dennis Quaid because of the Paratrap.
Fair.
I think it's better, though, that the husband was like this wafty, blonde, heavier set man.
Yeah, I agree.
Versus the dark-haired Dennis Quaid.
Right. Totally agree. Also, this film had a 68% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes and only a 37% audience score. Which I think is crazy.
That baffles me.
I know. I don't understand.
I think it's really well rated on Amazon.
I think you're right. Yeah, we saw. So, yeah, I don't know where they get the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
But it's wrong.
It deserves better.
It really does.
Anything else on the plot?
No, I just really like it.
Me too. It's so fun. So we rated Jen's character, Mickey Dawson, a 10 out of 10. And this is the only Jennifer Aniston character that we gave a score of 10 to. Mm-hmm. So this is super impressive. First of all, for some reason, I love that her name is Mickey. I don't know why. I just feel like it really fits.
I wonder what's that short for? Or is that the name?
I don't know.
Maybe it's
Michaela or something. Michaela is not a 1970s
Michelle. Maybe it's like a
Michelle. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Things I love about her character. I think the main thing I love is I love seeing her development from the beginning to the end. At the beginning, like we mentioned, you get the sense that she is a little bit afraid of her husband. She kind of agrees to whatever he says, even if she doesn't agree with it. Like when he wanted to drive, even though he was drunk, she like mentioned it once, like, oh, I should drive or I want to drive. But as soon as he says no, she like doesn't fight for it. So she, at the beginning, she's just like, you get the sense that she's a little bit more meek. And then by the end of the movie, when she's talking to Frank again, after she's gone through this whole kidnapping, she has grown so much in the span of a few days, and she is not afraid of him anymore. She confronts him very directly about the crimes he's committing, the way that he handled the whole kidnapping and the ransom. And she's like, I'm going to fight for what I want and what I deserve out of this situation. And I love seeing that change from her.
She almost seems more angry at how Frank handled the situation than the fact that she was kidnapped in the first place.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe because she's like, you're my husband. I have a certain level of expectation from you.
Yeah. And you prioritized money over my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Money that you've been hiding from me over my life. That's even worse.
Seriously. And I just love how when she is being held captive, like she's handling that situation with so much composure, but she's also, again, fighting for herself when she needs to versus Richard poking him in the eye with a cigarette, obviously. That,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think at that point in the movie, we're like, okay, that's a 10.
Yeah.
For her, like, character. We're like, how can you?
Amazing.
No. Yeah, it's amazing. And then, like, kicking him when he was attacking her. Yeah, I just love that whole part of seeing her character arc,
mm-hmm.
I think is what really sold it for me.
Yeah, I watched an interview with Jen, and she also noted the character arc, and she said that she loves how Mickey finds her, like, inner ninja, yes. And ooh, really fights that. For herself. Like, it really is amazing. I think this is probably, I feel like so many other movies that we've watched were, like, very, you know, it wasn't a bad character, but, like, what actually happens to this character?
Right.
They don't learn a lesson, or, like, nothing actually happens. Like, this movie, stuff happens to this, yes, character, and
absolutely,
she changes, and it's really cool. I love the moment where she kind of switches from disbelief at the situation to recognizing what's happening and asking for more information about,
yes,
what they know about Frank. She's like,
so tell, okay, me about these apartments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She just, like,
how can I turn the situation,
exactly,
and come out on top?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. It's amazing. And I also love that she's super smart. And again, this is a character that I think people perhaps make assumptions about at the beginning,
mm-hmm,
but she knows what's going on. And when Lewis tells her that she's going home, she's immediately suspicious of the situation. Like,
right,
she knows something's up and that that's not right. And I think she can even tell that Lewis doesn't know that something's wrong.
Yes. Like, she's very perceptive.
Yeah. Like, she knows that he's not going to hurt her, and that, because he's the one that she asked about the apartments too. So I think she,
right,
like, reads the room very well.
Agreed.
And even though their son's not in the movie very much, I really enjoyed the subtle nod at the beginning where she says she wants to talk to her son when he gets home, just about, like, being honest about what he's really feeling. Like,
mm-hmm,
it's like she wants to see if he feels unsafe or unhappy at home with Frank and maybe wants to leave him. And so she's,
yeah,
kind of trying to feel out the situation without alarming her child.
Right.
Which I really like.
Yeah, I really like that part too. One part that's just kind of funny, I think, that is one of those moments of comedic relief that we were kind of talking about, is when Richard comes up to Mickey in the room after she's told she's going to go home and she's a little bit suspicious. Before he attacks her, they're kind of having a conversation, and Richard says he's going to miss her being around here. And she sarcastically says, oh, it's been such a lovely time, which is what kind of eggs him on to attack her. But obviously not her fault, but I just think it was so funny that she kind of took that moment to, like, try and be lighthearted in the situation. I thought that was, like, kind of a funny part of her character.
And I also thought it was kind of amazing at the beginning, you know, we obviously don't have the full background on the situation, but even though she's not happy with Frank by any means, she's still kind of trying to shut down Marshall's advances,
mm-hmm,
which is pretty respectable given the fact that you were in, like, a terrible marriage.
Right.
And your husband is a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, genuinely terrible.
Right.
So she got some character points for that as well.
Yeah, I agree. Overall, I love this character, obviously. I mean, we rated it a 10 out of 10. But this is one of those characters where I'm like, I think her character developed so well. It was so fun to watch all of it. But I'm still like, man, I want to see more of it. Not because I didn't get enough, but just because I liked it so much. Like, I'd love to see another snippet of her life in some movie or show,
mm-hmm,
to know what she's like in other aspects of her life, or to see what, you know, like, a sequel or something would be like for something like this. I just think it would be really cool to see, like, more aspects of her character.
Yeah, totally agree. And I also love when she's at the country club after she's been kidnapped, and she, like, tells the women at the table that she's been kidnapped,
yes,
and gets up and leaves.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, Mickey.
Totally. So good.
It's so great. It's so great. Where she's just like, I don't have to do this anymore, so,
yep,
I'm not going to.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So for Jennifer Aniston's acting in Life of Crime, we gave her a 9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Another very strong score. Even from the very beginning, you know, when she kind of flinches when her husband reaches in to grab something from the car, it's, like, so subtle, but in that split second, you get such a clear image of what their relationship is like, and it really sets the tone for your view of their marriage throughout the entire,
mm-hmm,
movie. And it's such a small thing, but it means a lot to the film.
Mm-hmm. I also think she does a really good job at the beginning when she cuts her foot. She's, like, limping for the next few scenes as they're, you know, taking her upstairs and stuff like that. And I think just the way she's stepping on the side of her foot is so realistic and convincing. And I don't know, like, how she came to that physicality, but it's just so convincing. Like, if you've ever gotten something on the very bottom of your foot, you totally do step on the side. But I don't know that you would think of that just like off the top of your head. So I was impressed by that.
Yeah. And, you know, for someone who's acting with a mask on for, you know, a portion of this movie, even like just anytime she's kind of like scared in that bedroom, mask or not, she does an amazing job of showing she's like kind of holding it together, but she's really scared. Mm-hmm. And when she has just the mask on, like all you can see is her mouth.
Yes.
And you are still able to see, like, with her body posture and the way she's setting her mouth, like, that she's terrified.
Yes. It's amazing what she's able to display with the majority of her face being covered.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, it is genuinely.
Yes.
Amazing. Shout out to Kale. You're welcome.
He calls us out every time we don't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite part about her acting in this is when she's wearing the mask because it is so impressive. And I wish I knew more about what went into that and how it evolved over time. Like, did she act at first without the mask on so that she could get used to the situation, or did they want her to just be immersed in it? And so she started with the mask so that it was like more realistic. I'm just so curious about the process that went into that.
Yeah. And like when Lewis is telling her about Frank and his affair, her back is turned to him, mm-hmm. but you can kind of see her like thinking and trying to figure things out. And her facial expressions are so good. You know, mm-hmm. I think we've commented a lot on throughout her career, you can start to see her character thinking, which is so amazing. And I think this is a really good exhibit of that, where, you know, she's receiving this brand new information and she's processing all of it and she has a lot of questions, but she's in like a really obviously uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like all flows perfect.
Yes. It's amazing. So good. I love when she's confronting Frank at the end. I think obviously we already talked about her character in that, but I think her acting in that is so good too. Like her reactions when she's like getting mad at him for calling their bluff, things like that. I think she portrays that really well. She's like completely exasperated. She's kind of in disbelief that he did what he did, which I think is really, really well done.
And this is another movie during that assault scene with Richard.
Mm-hmm.
I think she does an amazing job of acting within that scene. And again, this is a scene, it doesn't go, you know, too far, but it's very scary. And she does an amazing job with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, she goes from screaming in disbelief to, like, trying to fight back against him to, like, crying and following his instructions because she has no other choice. And then when she hears Lewis, she immediately fights back. Like, it's this really whirlwind, like, a whirlwind of emotions that I think she just, I don't know. How does she do it? I don't know.
So good. So moving on to our hair section of the last movie that we're reviewing for Jennifer Aniston. This is iconic. Very deservingly gave it a 2 out of 2. This is like the blondest her hair is in any of her movies. I'm obsessed with it. I think the opening scene when she's at that dinner or party or whatever it is, the little like swept back look, it looks so good. It's so smooth. And I immediately was like, oh, I just want that hairstyle right now.
Yeah, it is so beautiful. And then in the following scene, she has these like soft curls with the side part. She's got these amazing like hats. Her costumes in this movie are
so good. I love amazing when she's driving her son in the car. She's got those soft curls, but she puts on that beanie or not a beanie. Sorry. She puts on that. It almost looks like a beret.
Yeah.
Like a soft felt beret. Mm-hmm. It looks so good. And I was like, well, I want to wear that right now in 2020.
Yes.
I turned to you and said, how much do you want to wear that hat, right?
Yeah, Kale called. I was like, yeah, absolutely. And also, the scene after that, she's at the country club. She's wearing this, like, camel-colored leather trench coat, which I also immediately wanted. And she overall just makes the 70s look so good. I'm like, wow, I wish these were all, like, in style right now.
I know. I mean, I'm wondering if they didn't poof her hair up maybe enough for the 70s, but I guess there were some slicker looks then as well.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, her hair looks perfect the entire time she's being held hostage, which we already commented is either unrealistic or she has amazing hairspray.
Yeah.
But it really does look really good. It looks really good throughout.
It's so good. And again, she has bangs in this movie too. Actually, it's kind of like her hair is kind of a similar length and cut as to We're the Millers, which we just reviewed last week. But
it's just like way blonder.
Yeah, it's way blonder, and it's styled more like the 70s. But yeah, again with those bangs, which somehow she can pull off.
And at the end, she has this like half up with some bangs down situation, mm-hmm. and it looks amazing.
So good. And her eyes, again, in this movie, especially at that scene at the end, look sort of that like seafoam green color, which we've mentioned before, and I think it must be when her hair is like this really blonde color for some reason.
Yeah. It's so blonde that it makes me realize how not super blonde she usually is, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Just really good. And then for a Would You Watch Again score, we obviously gave this a 5 out of 5.
It's fun to watch a second time.
Yeah, especially knowing the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we were really nervous rewatching this movie, and we actually watched it at the same time. Usually when we rewatch, we just rewatch on our own time. But last week, after we finished recording, where the Millers were like, let's watch Life of Crime and, like, make sure.
Yeah.
And after we finished watching it, we were both texting each other, and we were like, I'm sure. Like, this is it.
And even Kale, who had not seen it and who was excited to see it because we had rated it 1, as we were watching it, he's like, oh, yeah, this movie is so good. So that made us feel, like, better, too. We're like, okay, yeah, we're right.
Yeah, it's just, it's so different from everything else. I know some people are not going to agree with this, but having watched every single movie multiple times, taking detailed notes on it across all these different segments, you know, plot, character, acting, hair, Would You Watch Again? I feel like we are, we're allowed to make this decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that we are rating this on these 5 different categories, this point system that we've come up with, which I think has done a good job of helping us rank these movies. But I mean, there definitely are other movies I would watch on more occasions than this one. Like there are others that are a little bit more lighthearted where we could not rate her acting so highly, or we could not rate the plot so highly because there's a lot of plot holes, but you just don't care sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I think it's another thing to remember is like, this is the 1 Jen movie according to our ranking system. I definitely think it's in my top. I would say it's like one of my favorite Jen movies, but if I were just picking like my favorite, I don't know that I would say this one, but it's like in the within the confines of the rating system. But I totally agree with you. I think having seen every movie multiple times, this absolutely deserves to be 1.
Yeah. And like you said, just looking at it from more of a critic's perspective or critiquing perspective than from a did this movie make me feel warm and fuzzy and do I enjoy watching it? Like, those are 2 very different things.
Yeah, totally.
If you haven't seen this movie, you need to go watch it. Even if you are not a, I don't know why you're listening to this, if you're not a Jennifer Aniston fan, but even if you're not a Jennifer Aniston fan, like, this movie is so much more than that. And I think that's another reason why it's so good is that it's, like, so different. It's so artistic. The cinematography is great. Like, you have a good time watching it. You're really immersed in the whole plot.
Mm-hmm.
And that twist at the end just gets you.
Yep. It's so good.
It's worth it. So to review, we gave Life of Crime, the plot, a 9 out of 10. Jen's character, a 10 out of 10. Her acting, a 9 out of 10. Her hair, a 2 out of 2. And a Would You Watch Again score of 5 out of 5. Which means that Life of Crime has a total score of 35 out of 37 points and is ranked 1 out of 38 movies.
Yay!
Yay!
We can't wait to see your reactions on Instagram.
And this is really, really close to We're the Millers.
Yes.
And like We're the Millers was 34.5.
Mm-hmm.
So these were super close together.
Yes.
Like absolutely. Half a point difference, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And The Breakup was 33. So pretty tight race for the top, but stand by it.
Yeah, definitely. So we have had so much fun doing our season 1 of Girl Crush podcast, watching all of these Jennifer Aniston movies, sharing our thoughts with you. It's been super fun for Anna and I to do this together. And we love that you've kind of been on this journey with us, especially on Instagram, like reacting and telling us your own thoughts and your own favorite movies.
So when Allie texted me from the car like over a year ago, was it over a year ago? Yeah, it was like last June.
Yeah, I just looked
at
it. It was last June, yeah.
When Allie texted me, she and Kale were driving to one of your parents' house, I think. Mm-hmm. And I get this text from her. And, you know, we've said this before. This was originally just supposed to be a Thrillist article or a BuzzFeed article, you know, because we just didn't agree with someone else's rankings. And we were like set out to prove a point. But she texted me. She's like,
at that point, we were watching the movies. But
she was like, Kale has this crazy idea that we should make this a podcast. And at this point, I had already moved 1,000 miles away. And I was like, how on earth are we going to do that?
Yeah.
But Kale was like, if you guys agree to do this, I will throw everything into learning how to produce this for you. And yes. So we were like, let's do it. And mm-hmm. I think it's just been, first of all, really fun, like an amazing journey, like such a, I don't even know if it's fair to call this a hobby because we spend so much time on this.
Right.
But especially I think during quarantine, like working from home and like we live in apartments, like yes. we're spending a lot of, you know, time pretty much living in our offices, and being able to have this as an outlet has been really rewarding. And having moved away, like being able to connect with you, Allie, has been amazing. And I love that, like, we text every day and we FaceTime multiple times a week, and like that we have this together, it just means a lot to me. And I really love it.
I'm literally crying.
So thank you, Kale, for your crazy ideas. And thank you to all the people who have listened to us. Like, I don't know what we expected going into this, but like we have a lot of listeners.
Yeah, we have fans.
It's really rewarding, and like that's not the point of this at all,
right?
But it's a really great side effect.
Yeah, totally. Also, I'm composing myself because Anne's little improv speech just made me cry. And I'm sure I cannot respond as eloquently, but I feel the exact same way. It's been so much fun. And I love getting to connect with you on this. And you're right, it has been fun. And of course, the point was not to, you know, get fans or whatever, but it's really cool to see people from all over the world connecting on something. And even if it's something that might be what some people might think is silly, like movies, it's just fun to have that outlet when there's so many serious things going on in the world. And we can all connect on something that's like fun and lighthearted and reacting to and enjoying other people's art and people's hard work, I think is just a really cool thing.
Yeah.
Also, Anne and I have always, literally since we met, which was 10 years ago this month.
Oh my God.
I know. We literally met 10 years ago this month.
And when was Quad Day at Illinois? If it was today, I'm going to start bawling.
It honestly could have been.
It might be the day this episode drops. Hold on.
That's more likely.
Please hold.
Are you looking up Quad Day 2010?
Yes.
We just realized that the day that this episode comes out is the 10-year anniversary of us meeting.
I'm literally gonna sob.
If I cannot even have pictured that we would be doing something like this 10 years later. But I will say, ever since Anne and I we met 10 years ago, we became really close friends really fast and became best friends like within that same year. Roommates, da da da, history is made. But from the very beginning, like we always wanted to work together. Like, you know, you just have some friends where you're like, any endeavor in life, like I want that person with me.
Mm-hmm.
We both were like on the exec board of our acapella group. And worked really well together with that. And we literally always dreamed of opening some sort of business together or doing something together in the future. And apparently this is it.
We made some like really embarrassing Google Doc list at some point after we graduated of like potential business endeavors. And this was not one of them because I don't think podcasts were really a thing then.
So true. Oh, man. It's, yeah, anyway, we're getting all in our feels right now.
Too long, didn't read, find you a friend like Allie, and you'll go far in life.
Ditto.
Anyway, just a little end of season one love fest there.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for coming on this hashtag Jen journey with us. We couldn't have pictured what it would turn out to be, and we're super excited.
And it's not quite over yet. So.
Exactly.
Do not despair.
So definitely a little bit bittersweet to be finishing up our season one here, but wanted to make sure everybody knows that even though season one is ending, we're already working really hard on season two. We already mentioned that our season two girl crush is Sandra Bullock, and we've already watched, what is it? We've already watched 17 of her movies.
Yeah.
And she's been in more movies than Jen. So we have a ways to go, but we're hard at work prepping that, and we'll be bringing you season two in a few months. But in between seasons, we'll be dropping bonus episodes with some Jen content. So, of course, Jennifer Aniston has not only been in a lot of movies, but clearly her iconic role of Rachel in Friends. We have some thoughts about that, so we want to share that in a bonus episode. And we also will be doing a bonus episode on The Morning Show. And then we have some other ideas for some fun little bonus episodes on other mini girl crushes we have or other gen content that may come up in the future. But definitely reach out to us on Instagram if you have other ideas of bonus episodes that you'd like us to do or things that you're curious on our thoughts on, and we would love to do those.
Yeah, and now that we're not both trying to prep for this season and also trying to hide season two from everyone and then also trying to prep for season two, I think we'll really be watching a lot of Sandra Bullock movies.
Yes.
So we're going to try and get to season two as quick as we can.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned on our Instagram for when season two will drop.
Yes, we won't make you wait forever because we're really excited too. And in case you didn't catch it on our last episode, we actually picked Sandy B in June of 2019. So this has been on our minds for a really long time. And once we started, you know, like we played around with maybe we shouldn't pursue that for season two, but like just the whole year seemed to really push us to do it. And once we started watching her movies, we were like, yes, this was an excellent choice. And then seeing everybody's like really excited guesses and then being really excited that that's who it was really exciting. So we're really excited for season two, if we haven't made that clear.
Definitely.
So thank you for listening to the Girl Crush podcast. Let us know your thoughts on Instagram at girlcrush_pod or find us on Facebook by searching Girl Crush Podcast. As usual, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
Oh.
That's it. Stay tuned for our next bonus episode. And we're going to stay like really active on it. I don't need to say this. We've been talking a long time. We're going to be really active on Instagram throughout. Yeah, don't cut that out.
Yeah, we already saw that. It's fine.
Okay.
Bye!